Happy Wednesday, Doll fans. Welcome to the PFN Miami Dolphins podcast. My name is Doll Freaky, here once again with my co-host, Adam Beasley. And today we have a special guest with us. We have Ian Cummings, the PFN NFL draft analyst. Welcome to the show, Ian.
Yeah, thank you for having me. We're finally in April. It feels like it's been forever, you know, but it's been a long time coming. Happy to finally be on the home stretch, kind of on the final straightaway here to the NFL draft. And we've been speculating for so long about what's going to happen. We're finally going to have an answer sooner or later. So I'm excited about that for sure.
Ian, how many appearances do you have booked this week?
Bro, I don't list it over. I just kind of, you know, people text me or message me. It's like, yeah, I'll come. I have a hard time saying no. So it's like, I think last week I had 6 in one day. So it definitely stacks up this time of year, but you just kind of roll with the punches and keep going.
Yeah, you must be insanely busy.
Yeah, this won't be super in-depth because we are draft novices. We need your expertise, and that's why we're having you on the show.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate the chance to talk about the Dolphins a little more. Obviously, one of the more exciting teams in the league. Questions about what they're going to do. But Mike McDaniel, that has really reworked that offense. And I think the defense with Anthony Weaver, things are looking up, right? So if you get more personnel, you can use the draft to your advantage to get more momentum. So we'll see what happens. But one of the more interesting teams in the league for sure.
I know. Yeah. Speaking from the fan standpoint, I'm excited. We've had a lot of movement in free agency, you know, a lot of disappointing losses and things like that. So, you know, it's no secret that our fan base was kind of, you know, shaken up a little bit in those first couple weeks of the tampering period and free agency. So obviously we're looking to fill some of those holes in the draft.
Yeah, but it's a good draft to need. I'll say that just in general, to need anything. I think the depth of the class, especially in the offensive line, is very strong, which the Dolphins definitely need that. I think the defensive tackle group as well. You can dip in there as well. The corner class is very strong, wide receivers. So I think at a lot of positions of need, there is that depth, both in the first round range, the day two range, even day three. I think, you know, they get slept on how many quality players are in that kind of range. So I think if you're the Dolphins, right, you don't have a ton of capital, but I think you're going to have an opportunity to make the most of what you do have.
Before we get too far into the weeds with the Dolphins, let's kind of set the stage of what the draft is going to look like. I got to be honest with you. Your big board is kind of my Bible. It's the it's the authoritative state, you know, document that I have to figure out what's going on, because it was funny. You and I were sitting down for dinner at the combine, and I was like, yeah, I think the Dolphins, there's some center with three names they might like. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's a pretty good wide receiver draft. And you're like, Beasley, you're an idiot. So I appreciate you, you know, not talking down to me. You could very easily, but let's kind of set the stage first for the draft and go from there. I mean, the number one pick is going to be Caleb Williams, right?
It's probably going to be. Yeah, him and Drake May are neck and neck on my board. I still think May gets slept on with just how good of a prospect he is. You know, I think he checks every physical and mental box you want, even if he can improve his mechanics and accuracy a little bit more. I think most of what he needs to fix is fixable, right? So I think the intangibles that he does have make me very excited about his projection. But Caleb Williams right now looks like he's going to be the number one pick. He's gone on a meeting with the Bears, right? Every report has said that he's probably going to be that guy. Less of a consensus around May, which is why I think Williams will be the guy. And I don't have any arguments for that. I think Williams checks all the boxes, that elite creative threat, that magician off script. But I think he's actually really good on RPO looks too. Very good, clean mechanics in structure. He can work on, you know, off platform, but also in structure on rhythm throws, timing throws, accurate. So I think for him, the biggest question was going to be, you know, character off the field, things like that. But everything you hear from his teammates is that they respect him. They love him. Right. And I think he's going to be that guy who can rally around. So I don't think there's any concerns. I think he's going to be the number one pick.
Yeah. So you have Drake May as your QB1, Caleb Williams too. And then there's a big drop off for you until you get to Jaden Daniels, which is surprising because you hear a lot of momentum for him to go to the Commanders, right? So what are they missing that you're seeing that has you saying, man, this might be a red flag?
Yeah, and to be fair, the gap closed a little bit on my final big board, which will be out next Monday, April 15th. So I finalized my top 100 for graphics yesterday, and Jaden Daniels is now in my top 15. He's not in the top 10, but he is in my top 15. I think the appeal with him comes from the dual-sided playmaking ability, right? I think he led the NCAA in 20 plus yard plays by like 20, at least 20 or 30. So his big play generation ability is unmatched. And that comes from his athleticism, his speed, his quickness, but then also his deep passing ability, his trajectory down the field, his ability to identify leverage mismatches and capitalize with his accuracy and his touch. I think that's very strong on his tape. But some of the concerns you have, the decision making off script, right? Like, this is a guy who's 6'4", 200 pounds, and he's jumping into a crowd of three defenders, you know, head first. It's like, I'd like him to avoid doing that, to preserve himself a little more at the next level. And then I don't think the arm talent is quite on par with that of Williams or May. I think he has good velocity in the short range, but his velocity doesn't quite carry as much in the intermediate and deep ranges, tight window throws, outside the numbers. And then there isn't that arm elasticity that you see with Williams, where he can elongate his angles off script and maintain congruence off script. Those things limit his upside a little bit to me. And I think it shows up too with the pressure to sack ratio, where he's not always quite as comfortable throwing off platform because of that. So there are some concerns with him. And I think the non-elite arm talent lowers his ceiling a little bit, but I still think you're working with a high ceiling and a guy who is worth top 10 consideration. Just for me, I have enough questions to get him a little bit lower than that.
I find it fascinating, Ian, like the way that you describe these guys, your adjectives that you use and everything. Like, can you just, I want to break it up for just 1 second. Just give us a little insight into like how much you study these guys and, you know, how you really put together these very thorough analytics. And, you know, honestly, you could sell any guy to me right now with just the way that you speak about them. So can you go through that just a little bit really quick?
Yeah, for sure. I try to. My philosophy is that I want to stay diagnostically oriented with these guys. You can get so caught up in narratives and, you know, hey, I want to be right on this guy. I want to have a player to, you know, plant my flag on. But and that was a big learning point for me, because back when I was like in college, Josh Rosen was coming out. I was just starting my evaluation and I was very results oriented. I was like, oh, I like Rosen. I'll plant my flag, right? But you need to be process oriented, because your process is going to naturally churn out those results. It's going to flow through from that. So I root my analysis in the diagnostics and the foundation. What do I see on tape? And to be able to adequately communicate that, you need to have a proper grasp of imagery, phrasing, right? So that's where those things come. Like arm elasticity, what does that mean, right? That's like you see a guy with a sidearm release or an obtuse arm angle, right? You see Caleb Williams do that so often, and it helps him in structure and off platform. That's what that is, right? That ability to go outside of that 90 degree angle and elongate those throwing windows to either evade pressure or, you know, throw open a guy down the field, right? Or layer touch and velocity on throws. A lot of components go into it. And to be able to properly communicate that, you need to have the imagery, the phrasing, the vocabulary down. And so that's where it's rooted for me. But I also need, you know, as an evaluator, I need to understand what I'm saying. I can't just, you know, give you a word salad and expect it to, you know, be good enough, right? So the diagnostics are the foundation. And then from there, I think about how can I communicate this? How do I answer every question that I have? And it goes from there. I think it's a two-sided thing, but that's generally the foundation for me.
Fascinating. Thank you so much for elaborating. It's obviously, it's very clear to me that this is why you are the resource on this.
So we all agree that it's going to be some combination of, quarterback top three. We don't know if the Patriots are going to stay in there, if they're going to trade out. The Vikings are a team you hear a lot of buzz for, but almost everyone expects the top three picks all to be quarterbacks, correct?
Yeah. You know, I think there's been some speculation that maybe the Patriots trade back down if they don't like a guy. But if you have a chance to pick a third overall and get a franchise QB without trading down, it's a hard sell to me that you would trade down and forego that chance and give it to someone else, right? As much as Jaden Daniels isn't quite in the tier of May and Williams for me, but I can see the reasoning behind someone considering him that high, because the playmaking ability is real. The accuracy is real. You know, the poise in the pocket is real. And you hear everything about his work habits and his leadership, his competitive mentality, and how he bounced back from that transfer from Arizona State. They're all rave reviews off the field, and the playmaking is there. So I, you know, even though he's not quite that highly rated for me, I can easily see why JJ McCarthy would be considered that high. JJ McCarthy is more of a top 25 guy for me. But again, you know, I think you see why it's warranted for some teams.
So beyond that, then I guess the draft kind of really starts shaking out at four. There's questions over who the first wide receiver taken would be. You have Marvin Harrison as your number one prospect, regardless of position. And the big board that we have access to now, does that remain the same and the one that you're going to drop in a couple of days?
So he actually did fall from 1 to 3. The more I was thinking about it, he's my top non-QB by a decent margin. He's above a 9.5 on my scale, which is almost unheard of. He's my top receiver ever graded, over Jamar Chase even. I think at 6'4 or 6'3, 208 is what he measured in at. But, you know, on tape, obviously the contested catchability, right? The size, the length, the physicality, but his route running to me is incredible. I think already an elite separator who has that hip sync, that malleability at stems, but he knows how to manipulate DBs into giving him optimal looks too. He's got the speed and the burst to separate and stack guys on the vertical plane, and it can be a rack threat too. So he checks every single box that there is to check, right? The question for me was, if I'm a team that has an equal need at both quarterback and receiver, would I pass up Drake May or Caleb Williams to get Marvin Harrison? And the answer is just no. I'm sorry. QB is too important. So once you get to that close, once you're splitting hairs that closely, that's when positional value comes into play for me. And to me, May and Williams are both that caliber of QB prospect where they have to be at the top of the board if it's not someone else.
I guess, and the reason I ask this is if you're a Dolphins fan, and we got to probably bring this back to the Dolphins because that's why people are tuning in, you want quarterbacks to be shoved off the board if you're picking 21, right? You want players to get overdrafted for need, for misidentification, just simply because they play a position that has a higher premium because you don't need a quarterback. You're not taking a quarterback this year. You want offensive line. You want pass rush. You want potentially wide receiver and maybe cornerback. I think those are the four positions of need for the Dolphins this cycle. Who are some players you think that might help the Dolphins that way, that get shoved up into the top 20 that shouldn't be? And that's going to really help the Dolphins have someone fall to them.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think quarterback is the wild card because you pretty much have four locked quarterbacks, right? Drake May, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, right? Then I think it's one of Michael Penix or Bo Nix that could go round one. Maybe both of them do. I think that's kind of, I don't see that happening. I think it's going to be one or the other. Penix, I think, has the better chance because he passed the medical check at the combine and his processing, his leadership is always, both of them, their leadership is vaunted, right? But I think Michael Penix Jr., you see the processing ability on tape, the ability to pick out windows outside the numbers, the field vision, right? And the gunslinger mentality, the arm strength for sure. Another area where he has Nick's beat, you know, he can generate more velocity and sustain that down the field too. So I think Penix, if they don't have concerns about the medicals, I could easily see him cracking round one. And you look at the QB needy teams too. The Bears are going to pick a QB. Washington will pick a QB. New England will pick a QB. So that's three guys off the board right there. So then you have the Vikings, the Giants potentially, the Raiders, the Broncos, all fighting over J.J. McCarthy. Only one of them is going to get that guy. So you're still going to have three QB needy teams. And that scarcity and that demand might drive up the value of a guy like Penix or Nix to the point where they do go in mid-round one. I don't know what's going to happen, but that's the supply and demand equation that you're working with. So Penix and Nix at quarterback are two guys. And I will say, if you're Miami, if you're not dead set on a tackle in round one, I think the run on tackles could really help you because you've got Joe Alt, Olufoshanu, Amarius Mims, Taliese Fuaga, J.C. Latham, Tyler Guyton, Troy Fatanu. Seven or eight tackles could go round one. And I think in the teens, once they start to go off the board, other teams are going to panic and say, hey, we got to work to get our guy. And that might push down a defensive tackle or an edge or a corner if you're Miami and that's what you want, right? It depends on what Miami is looking for. But those strong positions, receiver, tackle, if there's enough of a run, it could push down a player that's a really good fit for the Dolphins and what they need.
Yeah, I think we talked about this last week, Allie and I did, that, those are the positions in need. I think they would love to have one of those tackles that could play guard in 2024 and then have him replace Teron Armstead in 2025. But I don't think they're going to force it. And I think if you know Greer's history, and you certainly know Mike McDaniel's history, they also look for game changers, right? Guys that can make real big plays. And that's why I don't think you should eliminate the possibility of Brian Thomas. If by chance he would somehow fall, or even if he'd get to like 18, 19, maybe they give up an asset to go get him. How do you think he would fit? They're obviously not going to get one of those top three wide receivers. They're going to be long gone by 21. But what do you think of the odds of maybe someone like Brian Thomas being available at 21? And if so, the fit that he would be in Miami?
I think it's possible for sure. I think the Colts are probably a threat to take him at 15. I think the Jaguars at 17 are a threat to take him as well. But I do think there's a chance. The Steelers at 20 are probably the biggest roadblock because the Steelers, they traded Deontay Johnson. They got George Pickens, but you still need a wide receiver too, another guy. And they like those size speed players. We know they do. So I think it's whether he gets there, I'd say a 40% chance. I think he's going to be a top 20 guy. But if he is there, man, that fit is really exciting because you have Tyreek Hill, you have Jaden Waddle, but you need that size threat. They traded for Chase Claypool trying to get that, and obviously it didn't work out for them, right? But I think what you need beyond that size and that blocking ability, obviously, I think Thomas can block. The effort can be a little inconsistent at times, but we know we can do it. You could really use a guy who has that movement Z capability where you can use him across the line, across the offense, off motions, right? But he can stress the defense vertically. He can stress them on crossers. I think just any way that McDaniel can scheme him opportunities, right? That having that flexibility to be utilized in different ways is very valuable. And I think Brian Thomas Jr. fits that to a T. He's explosive. He's very streamlined. He's really good with his flexibility, sustaining acceleration through route stems, right? But then there are some very bright flashes of route running execution on tape. Attacking the football is one of his best traits. Passes frame on the vertical plane, outreaching defenders, walling them off with his frame. And then he has the long strider speed to accrue rack as well. So I think if he is there, that's the key. If he is there, I think it's a great fit. And I think his talent is good enough that it warrants taking that wide receiver.
Yeah, that definitely makes me excited to know that we could have another, you know, great speed and agility guy to add to our core that we already have. We also like our Bama guys. We know our history there. So how do you see it shaking out with J.C. Latham? I know, you know, the Steelers might also be looking at him too. Like you said, they could be our number one roadblock. So what about J.C.?
Yeah, J.C., he's a wild card because I think he could go top 20, but I think he could slip all the way to 25, right? If the Cowboys need him or something like that, even farther. He's a unique case because you have a lot of quality tackles, right? So that's the key. When you have that type of volume in round one, we talked about Fatanu, Fuaga, Fashanu, Mims as well. You've got guys that could go before him and bump a guy down the board, right? And I think Latham, if I had to pick, if I had to choose a guy that could follow that point, he'd probably be at the top of the list because 6'6", 330, right? He's a road grader, obviously, but things like corrective athleticism, flexibility aren't quite as strong on his tape as they are with guys like Fuaga, Fatanu, Mims, right? So I think those things would nullify that. He's a very explosive vertical athlete when he's attacking off the line. I think that shows up. He's very physical, very powerful. And I actually like his pass sets a lot. I think as a pass protector, he's got clean footwork. I think he's very well leveraged. He's got great balance. There are a few times where he can let power rushers into his frame and get past his skates, and that can cause issues for sure. But I think by and large, you're working with a guy who's got blue chip talent for sure. And for the Dolphins, it's tricky because you've got Teron Armstead at left tackle. You've got Austin Jackson, who's been – he's experienced a career resurgence at right tackle, so you don't really have a need there. You could play Latham at guard in the immediate timeline if you wanted him to, and you could experiment with a move to left tackle. But because he's more of a natural right tackle, there's a little more uncertainty there. You know, I think if you're the Dolphins and you have the choice, you might prefer a guy like Amarius Mims, who has experience in both left and right tackle, right? So it's all about your pick. But the Alabama guys, we know they're pretty easy to bank on. They have a track record when it comes to producing NFL talent. And I think J.C. Latham gives some of the versatility, the physicality, the people moving ability that you are looking for, either a guard or right tackle.
Yeah, I want to dig a little bit more into those tackles because I've been writing about them for the last couple of weeks and trying to, you know, play Sherlock Holmes and trying to figure out who would be the best fit for Miami. Alt's obviously number one, right? He is the best tackle on this draft.
He is to me, and, yeah.
Yeah, and beyond that, Fuaga, I think you have him as your tackle two, is that correct?
I have Fashanu as my tackle two, then Fuaga as my tackle three, and then Troy Fatanu is actually climbed my board. He's my OT4 now, and I think I have Latham is my OT5, slightly over Mims. I really like the upside with Mims, and I do think he does have a higher floor in some areas than people let on. But Latham, to me, I think he gets forgotten sometimes with how solid of a player he is.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to ask you, like, are we splitting hairs here? Are these shades of gray, or are there real differences between these top 20 players?
When they're all in the top 25 like that, I can see the reasoning for taking all these guys, right? You know, I think they're all clustered together as first round talents. Even Mims, like, he's my 22nd overall player, I believe, but I could see taking him in the top 15, either because the upside is so apparent with him. It's just, it is splitting hairs, I think, a lot more with these guys, as opposed to, you know, Tyler Guyton at Oklahoma, who's more of a top 32 guy for me, a little bit farther down my board. Again, I can still see the upside, but this top group of five or six is really in a different tier. And I think Alt is separated above all of them because he's, you know, to me, he's a different breed of player, you know, with his ability to acquire leverage, his athleticism. You know, I think these guys are all clustered at the top, though. I think that group of five or six, that's kind of the group you want to draw from if you're Miami.
Yeah. And the reason I ask is, like, to me, I think the Dolphins are in a pretty good spot because there is going to be a theme to that top 20, right? There's going to either be a run on tackles or a bunch of tackles are going to get overlooked. And, you know, wide receivers and edge rushers and defensive tackles are going to get overdrafted. If the Dolphins are there at 21 and Chop's there and Latu's there and all these pass rushers that somehow fall, who do you think the best of that bunch might be if the Dolphins have their pick?
It's a tough question. It's like picking my favorite kid, man. It's because they're all very highly graded. They're all top 20 players for me, too. And I think with Anthony Weaver's scheme, you're looking more at guys who can probably line up at 3-4 stand up outside linebacker, right? You're looking more odd hybrid alignments where you want guys who can rush from space. If they want to play head up at 5 tech, right, that's good, too. But having that versatility is key. Jared Verse, to me, really stands out. I think his speed to power profile, he's my edge four, but they're really close. They're essentially neck and neck. They're all clustered together. So I can see taking either one of them. I think if you're the Dolphins, right, you want a guy who can play strong run defense. Jared Verse is the best run defender of that group. He's a rock slab at 5 tech and 7 tech. He's really good at setting the edge, limiting displacement, and then making plays in the backfield. His motor runs hot in pursuit, and his speed to power game is really appealing. He's a really good hand fighter, but his explosiveness, his twitch, he can use those traits to widen tackles off the snap and then explode inside the torso with extensions and just blast them back into the pocket. Love that part of his game. I think the trade-off with him is that he doesn't have as much bend, hip flexibility, right? There are a lot of times where he'll get to the apex and he's not able to roll his hips through. He gets locked up. And whereas Robinson can dip underneath tackles while sustaining acceleration, Latu can do it while multitasking with his hands. So if you want that bend component as a pass rusher, Robinson and Latu would be the way to go. But if you want that strong run defender with the speed to power profile, I think Verse would be the way to go. So if you want a balance of both, I think Robinson gives you the most power, but his run defense can be a little streaky. So it just comes down to what flavor you want. If you want the most well-rounded player, Jared Verse. If you want the technician as a pass rusher, Latu. If you want the alignment versatile maniac with disruptive ability, Chop Robinson is probably the way to go.
No chance Dallas Turner falls.
I don't think so. No, he's a top 10 player for me. I think he'll probably go top 15 at the latest. If you're the Dolphins and you really like him, I think you're going to have to trade up because his physical profile, we've rarely seen anything like it.
Yeah, I think, and I've been doing all the talking here, Ali. Sorry if I'm...
No, please. Go ahead.
To me, I've just been giving this a fair amount of thought. It wouldn't surprise me if they zig what we think they're going to zag. Because like the galaxy brain is, hey, this is the best offensive tackle draft perhaps ever. They need a tackle long term. They need a guard. How could they not take a tackle? But I think that there might be some real value that falls to them, and they might be able to get away with taking pass rusher. We haven't talked about defensive tackle yet. I think that's the least likely of the group that they go with, to be honest, even though it's a real need, simply because they have so many bodies now at defensive tackle, they can kind of get away with it. But there's a lot of good interior linemen that are going to be there at 55 that if the Dolphins want to go wide receiver, if they want to go pass rush, if they want to go defensive tackle, if they want to go corner, which I think is not going to happen, but if all you know, the off chance they go corner in round one, that they can get away with it because they can find their guard in round two.
Yeah, for sure. And I think defensive tackle, looking at the round two group, you have Ruke Arororo from Clemson. It took me forever to practice that pronunciation and actually get it. But he's fun. He reminds me, his physical profile, he's got some young Gerald McCoy to him where he's very explosive, well-leveraged, really good proportional length, already one of the better run defenders in the class. I think he'd be a perfect fit for this team. Michael Hall Jr. from Ohio State is another really fun player who gets slept on sometimes because he doesn't have the pretty statistical numbers, but another very explosive, agile player who's around 6'3", 290 with, I think, over 33-inch arms. So again, a lot to like with that physical profile, explosive, agile. He can win with a spin move. He's got flexibility. So a lot of fun players there. And then you have some really good run defenders like Chris Jenkins from Michigan, who's got the physical tools to mold. Dwayne Carter from Duke, who's a 3-year captain, right? I think immediately gets in your rotation as a quality two-phase player. So if you're Miami, yes, I have two really highly graded defensive tackles on my board, Johnny Newton and Byron Murphy II, right? But because the board is so sparse past the first round at a position like edge, right, I could easily see them getting a guy like Chop Robinson and then moving down the board to get Ruke Arororo or Michael Hall or, you know, Dwayne Carter, someone like that. And there's others too, you know, I'm sure that I'm missing. There's so many names in that day two group. And I think that's the lesson to take here, is that that's a position you can wait on. You don't need to rush the solution in round one.
I think if the Dolphins go defense round one, defense round two, Mike McDaniel might burn down the building. It would be stunning to me if they did that. I do think that they're going to make a real effort to get an interior lineman either day one or day two. How much are they hurt by not having a third round pick? I mean, they don't have a fourth round either, but it seems to me, and you stop me if I'm wrong, but this is a draft that's wide, but kind of shallow. It's got a lot of options early on, but you get to pick 150 and beyond, and it's not the best.
I do think there's talent in that range for sure. I think, you know, always the trade-off is the guarantee, right? You know, the guarantee that this is going to be an impact player. You don't have that in round five like you do in round two or three, right? But my philosophy that I've kind of adhered to as a draft analyst is there are always good players on the board. There are always players that you can work with. I think the three tech disruptor mold, even on day three, there are guys to be aware of. Juwan Briggs from Cincinnati, Justin Ebowigbe from Alabama, Tyler Davis from Clemson, right? So I think there are guys for sure. It's just, and Mekhi Wingo from LSU is another one I could keep going on. But, you know, what the trade-off is that some of those guys are maybe more confined than a player like Ruke or Michael Hall or, you know, Chris Jenkins, right? So that's the risk you run by waiting. But I do agree in general. I think this class is very strong at the top. I have 10 blue chip prospects. I have around 30 first round grades, which is very high. You don't normally see that. So I think that's the range. If you have a position you really need, draw from that, and then you can wait on. I think there is really a lot of day three talent too that could emerge as well. So, you know, you try to remain outcome independent. We don't know what's going to happen with any of these guys in the right situation. They could emerge, but if you have a position that you really need, you want to be proactive and authoritative in finding a solution for that.
Last question for me, and then I'll defer to you, Allie. There was kind of the Brock Purdy effect last year. A ton of quarterbacks we didn't think were going to get drafted end up getting drafted in day three. Do you think there's going to be a similar phenomenon? And look, the Dolphins could use a developmental quarterback. I don't know if they really see a future Skylar Thompson beyond training camp. So if there was a handful of day three guys that might fit in Mike McDaniel's system, who would they be?
I would say day three guys, Austin Reed from Western Kentucky is one. He was at the Shrine Bowl. He played really well at the Shrine Bowl. He's one of those guys who can put up big numbers with his accuracy, his poise in the pocket, his processing ability, but he has some measured angle freedom, creation ability. He can go off script. He's not a great athlete, but he does have kind of that savvy, that playmaking ability where, hey, I'm very comfortable just passing, being a quarterback, right? So I like that ability a lot with him. I think he can be a solid backup. Carter Bradley from South Alabama was actually at the Senior Bowl, and he showed out. He kind of proved that he has the arm strength to hold up the NFL level. He can generate really easy velocity. He's really reworked his mechanics. I believe he started his career at Toledo before going to South Alabama, and it was night and day from start to finish, his mechanics, his accuracy. So I think he gives you something to work with. But the player that I have circled as a potential guy who sneaks in at round six, around seven, is Keaton Slovis from BYU. He played at USC. He was actually an all-freshman player in 2019. He broke some freshman records, and then some shoulder injuries kind of derailed his career. He went to Pittsburgh for a year, then BYU for a year. And at the Shrine Bowl, he played very well, and then he tested very well with his athleticism. I think with his game, you look at a guy and you see very efficient mechanics, good accuracy, really good physical tools, athleticism-wise. His arm is pretty average, but he is athletic, he can go off script, and he can operate the offense within structure, on schedule, if you need him to. So I think when you're looking for a backup, those are a lot of the tools that you're looking for. Those on rhythm, in structure elements, but then also having the athleticism to go off script when you need to, right? So the biggest question for him will be the shoulder injury, but if he's cleared, I think he'll go round six or seven and be a quality backup.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ian, for your insight. So, you know, you spent all this time building up to the draft. We're 2 weeks out now. So what's life like for you after the draft?
Oh, man, I don't know. Everything goes away. You know, it's I do tennis coaching on the side, so we're not quite in tennis season, so that'll be in the future. But I'm going to take a vacation. I can guarantee that much. It's been busy, right? So this month leading up to it, I try to keep my schedule open. I'll do a lot of radio spots and podcast openings, right? But once the draft is over, you take some time to decompress a little bit, you know, tennis coaching. I do music on the side too, so just as a little thing. So I try to decompress a little bit, family, friends, things like that, visiting a buddy in Wisconsin. So I got that on the docket. But in the meantime, it's NFL draft prep. It's just kind of ramping up and making sure that we finish on a high note.
So I take it you'll be in Detroit.
I actually won't be in Detroit. That's kind of tough. I think it's easier when you're a site to cover it remotely, right? A lot less logistical things to take into consideration. So which I don't mind the quiet, you know, just kind of chilling, watching the draft from home. But I live in mid-Michigan, so it would be nice. It's a short drive, right? But it's pretty hectic at the same time. So you kind of take the pros and the cons for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
We need him too much right where he is because he is an absolute machine. Just so you know, Allie, a little known fact, not only does Ian love music, he is a composer. This is the next Leonard Bernstein we have on our podcast with us right here. So remember this day so you can say you knew him when.
Maybe we need an intro song for our podcast, huh?
Maybe I should get going on that for sure. I'll have to fire up GarageBand and see what I can do.
All your free time this week, right?
Yeah, exactly. All your free time.
If I can find like 5 minutes a day, maybe I can piece something together. We'll see. We'll go piecemeal for sure.
We'll talk about it when things are less busy for you. Thank you so much for joining us, Ian. Adam, always a pleasure, obviously. You guys can check us out on YouTube and Spotify and wherever you get your podcast. Ian, where can people find more from you?
Yes, you can follow me at I'm gonna keep calling it Twitter. I know it's X now, but I'm gonna keep calling it Twitter.
It's Twitter.
It's always Twitter at @IC_draft. If you ever have a draft question, feel free to hit me up. I try to be responsive whenever I can. So IC_draft on Twitter, and then obviously Pro Football Network. You can follow my content at PFN365.
Fantastic. Adam, do you have anything else?
Nope. Thanks for the time, my friend.
Thank you very much. Thank you guys so much for watching, and we hope to see you next week. Fins up.